Samuel Mazzucchelli's words serve as a motto for his life and for the many lives he inspired. He was a preacher, teacher, and social activist in the emerging state of Wisconsin in the 1800s. Mazzucchelli is also a man for our time, as he became a builder of churches, a founder of more than 30 parish communities, a civic leader, a defender of Native people, an educator, and the founder of the Sinsinawa Dominican Sisters, a congregation of Catholic sisters in the United States.
Keeping it relevant, it's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, that was the Sinsinawa Dominican sisters who were sharing that. I've had them on the air with me before. They just mentioned a name to you that I want to get you plugged into. And look, you might think I'm a little weird, or you might say, wow, Drew's ahead of the curve. I hope you say I'm ahead of the curve, because I really believe in the communion of saints. And I really believe that there are blesseds and venerables and servant of gods who can intercede for us very, very powerfully. Men and women who've gone before us, who have lived lives of heroic virtue, and who are waiting for you and I to say, hey, for you and me to say, I need your help. Can you help? And I guarantee you, you'll see it. I was introduced to Father Samuel Mazzucchelli, and today is actually the anniversary of his death. He was called home by a woman named Linda Shainman, and she took a trip with me one day, and I knew nothing about him. Green Bay's headquarters, or Relevant Radio's headquarters, currently is in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Right, we are located right next to the National Shrine of Our Lady of Good Help, and to the National Shrine of St. Joseph. This is really an anointed place, and I really believe God's going to work powerfully from this area. Relevant Radio has had its roots here and is continuing to grow. But before that ever took place, the missionaries took foot to this land, and they brought God. They brought the message of God to this area. And today's the anniversary of a priest who evangelized this part of the world. He lived in the upper Midwest during the 19th century, and he evangelized anybody he came across. His name was Father Samuel Mazzucchelli, and he came here like 1828. He spent most of his life in Illinois and then Iowa and Michigan and Wisconsin. He traveled on foot and horseback and snowshoe and canoe and anything he could get from one place to another, and he preached the gospel. He was an anointed preacher to anyone who would listen. He ministered the sacraments. He established parishes. He built churches. He visited the sick and the dying. He spent his life in dedication to God. And he was a model priest. He really was. And he had incredible gifts, too, mystical gifts, special love for the Virgin Mary. He did harsh penances, even had a vision of her. And St. John Paul II, of course, he was declared venerable by him. And I really believe his time is now. So if you are listening to me and you are praying for something that just does not seem to reach the ear of God, you're saying, I'm praying and praying and praying. Of course, pray for God's will. Pray for the clarity so you can know what that will is. But sometimes, miracles happen. I often share stories about divine mercy and the great miracle of Maureen Dygan. She went, when St. Faustina was just a servant of God, to her tomb and went to confession. And went Mass, and then she went and she prayed at the tomb of Faustina, who was not blessed at the time. She was just a servant of God. Or she was venerable, I should say. And she miraculously healed. Miraculously. So I've been turning to Father Mazzucchelli. As a fellow Italian, I feel connected to him. And I really believe that he is one of those unsung heroes. And I want you to hear his story. I want you to know who he is. And I want you today, on the anniversary of the day that he was called into heaven, to maybe turn to him when we pray the chaplet coming up a little bit later. And it's a delight to have my friend Linda join me today. She actually took me to the grave of Father Mazzucchelli and took me to the Sinsinawa Sisters, where I was able to hold what they call a penance chain. It's something that he wore to do penance. These great saints all understood suffering. They all understood the power that comes when we unite our prayer with suffering. And Samuel Mazzucchelli is buried, in the Diocese of Madison. And that's where his calls for sainthood is opened. And Linda joins me today. Linda, thank you for your time. And thank you for introducing me to this remarkable, I believe, future saint. But we'll see. We'll see what God has in store. A remarkable intercessor for sure.
Well, thank you for having me on, Drew. This is exciting to talk about Father Mazzuchelli, and especially on his anniversary of his entry into eternal life.
Yeah,
so this is perfect.
So, I mean, you've fallen in love with him. I know I have. I've been to his site. I intend to come back again. But how did you meet him? And tell us a little bit about his life. I know I kind of gave the broad brush perspective on his life. You can fill in the gaps and strengthen anywhere else that you think needs to be filled in. But share your story and how this saint, I believe saints reach out to us. I do. St. Faustina has done that to me. And I believe Mazzuchelli is one of those saints who's called out to me. And saints choose us sometimes. And in our own life, wherever you're listening, right, you might say, oh, it's St. Therese for me, or it's St. Anthony, or it's St. Joseph. And you can get that sense. How did Father Mazzuchelli reach out to you?
Well, it was when I was a young girl. I grew up about an hour away from Cincinnati, which is the Dominican community founded by Father Samuel. And we had a family friend who was working on building the new chapel that they were building in the 1960s. And so we would go over there to visit. So that's one of my first introduction to Father Samuel. And over the years, I've just gotten to know more and more about him. And the more I learn about him, the more I love him. And am amazed at this missionary priest and what he did and what he accomplished back, 150 some years ago without all of the conveniences we have today. At one time his territory was 50,000 square miles.
How much?
Covered probably 50,000 square miles.
Gosh. Wow.
His first assignment was what is now Wisconsin and Michigan. And he was once the only priest west of Lake Michigan.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So, how did he evangelize the territory here? I think America's an anointed nation. And I think God has chosen America to lead the world spiritually. I've said that before. It was in the upper Midwest in a place called Champion, Wisconsin, where in 1859 the Mother of God appeared and appeared to a Belgian immigrant. We know that down in what is now Texas, a nun would bilocate from Spain.
Mother Maria Vergara.
You got it. And would evangelize the natives before, the missionaries even got here. They knew the faith when she arrived. And then you take a look at the rivers. The Mississippi River was initially called the River of the Immaculate Conception. The Chesapeake Bay in Maryland called the Bay of St. Mary. I mean, you go through this whole litany of things. You see, and even the Revolutionary War, I believe there was a divine imprint on the way certain battles were won and what happened in our history. And I think Father Mazzuchelli is one of these great stories that is yet to be told. Did he have a relationship with the natives here? And why did he end up coming here? And tell us a little bit more about who he was.
Okay, so Father Samuel, Italian like you, he was born in Milan, Italy, in 1806. And at age 17, he answered God's call to join the Order of St. Dominic. So he was a Dominican, a preacher. And then at age 22, he answered God's call. He left home and all to come to the United States to be a missionary. And that was in a time when our country was only 52 years old then. He didn't know any English, but he eventually learned that language, plus French, because he ministered to the French Canadians, the Indian population. He was very, very understanding and supportive of the Indians, and he also learned German. And actually, the first book printed in Wisconsin was an Indian prayer book printed by Father Mazzuchelli.
Wow. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
I had no idea. So he also built churches, right? And he was a great architect. I mean, he had a lot of gifts, this guy.
He did. He definitely had a lot of gifts from God. So he built 20 churches and started 40 parishes in Wisconsin, Illinois, and Iowa.
Wow, that's amazing. So on the mystical side of him, I'd love you to share a little bit about that. I had the opportunity, and I would thank you for that, to take me to the convent there. And I was able to take what they called a penance chain and hold it in my hand. He wore this. I know he wore it so much that when they found him on his deathbed, it had been embedded into his skin. I mean, you talk about constant sacrifice and suffering. And he had great love for the Blessed Mother. And, correct me if I'm wrong, but he had apparitions of both Mary and St. Joseph. And, of course, this is a year dedicated to St. Joseph, such a great year. Fill me in on the mystical side of this priest. And we know he was a great missionary, great evangelist, great architect, great teacher. He's done so much, but What was his spiritual life like?
Well, his mother died when he was only, I think, 6 years old. And I think he formed a very special relationship with our Blessed Mother, and actually mainly under her title of Our Lady of Sorrows, which makes sense since he lost his mother at such a young age. And, he did have a vision of, well, he thinks he was visited by St. Joseph. He said one day he had a mysterious visitor just kind of suddenly appeared at the rectory and came in, and Father Mazzuchelli was telling him about some problem he was facing, and this man gave him a solution that he'd never even considered, and it was the perfect answer. And then the man left, and then Father looked to watch him leave, you know, down the street, and he disappeared.
Oh my God!
So he always felt it was St. Joseph. Yeah,
wow,
I know.
So, cool.
So that's typical St. Joseph. A very powerful saint, but he does his work very quietly.
Yeah. That's so true. So he not only had that vision, but did he encounter Our Lady too?
Yes, he did. Twice that we know of. Would you like me to tell him?
Yeah, no, please. Go right ahead.
Okay. So the first time was about 6 months before he died, and he was preparing for the consecration of one of the churches, one of the many churches he built. And he was laying awake in his tiny bedroom, and the door opened into a sitting room that they called the Blue Room. Mm-hmm. And Our Blessed Mother appeared to him in the Blue Room, clad in a white robe with a blue mantle enveloped in a blue cloud. And one of the nuns, apparently, one of the Dominican nuns was there and said he looked as if light were flashing out of his eyes. He spoke of the Blessed Mother as if he was seeing her. And he said, I was always a great admirer of beauty, but I never saw anything to compare with her beauty. She called me her child and told me to desist from an undertaking which I had in mind. So that was the first apparition. The second one was...
So let me ask you about that, though, because that's the first one. What happened after that with him? He was just emboldened in his mission? I mean, I'm assuming his holiness and his life must have been pretty well known. Was this a very private apparition, or was that known?
It was a private one, but it was witnessed by some nuns. So I think if it hadn't been for them, we might not have known about
awesome.
It. But yes, I think definitely Our Blessed Mother was a great influence on him.
That's great. So what about the other one?
The other one was just 2 days before he died. He had gone out, so he died, you know, 157 years ago today. The night he had gone out, like a few weeks before, and on a cold winter Wisconsin night, to minister to one of his sick parishioners, and he developed double pneumonia. And so a couple of days before he died, he was asleep, and he woke up, and he tried to raise himself to his feet, and he exclaimed, "Oh, good mother." And they said he had tears rolling down his cheeks. He appeared to be wrapped in profound meditation. And then he burst forth into tears of joy. And then the nuns apparently were there ministering to him. And they said, ask what was the matter. And he said, nothing but happy thoughts. God grant that I may have them in my last moments.
Wow, how beautiful. Well, my guest today is Linda Shainman. And we're talking... a little bit about Father Samuel Mazzuchelli, if you're just joining us. He was a great evangelist here in the in the early frontier, really. Went to some very rugged territory, and he brought Christ to the nation. Today's the anniversary of the day that God called him home. As I said, he was also a visionary. He was a mystic of that level, where both St. Joseph and the Mother of God appeared to him. I want to talk about a spiritual component that all of us are called to. It's exemplified in all the great saints. And it's something that he did to a heroic level. I don't think I'd ever be able to do what he did.
200 years ago in the beautiful city of Milan, Luigi and Rachele Mazzuchelli rejoiced at the birth of their youngest son, Samuel. Little could they have imagined where God's providence would lead him. Across the Atlantic to the dense forests and prairies of the old Northwest Territory. When, at age 17, Mazzuchelli entered the Dominican Order, his family could hardly understand his desire to join a Catholic religious order that, like so many others in Europe, seemed destined to dissolve. The young man traveled to Rome to study for the priesthood. There he heard the call of the American missions.
Keeping it relevant, it's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Giving you a look at both life and faith here. That's what you get in this program. It makes it different than any political show you might listen to or any news show. And I believe in the communion of saints. I do. And I want to plug you in to a great saint. It's a saint, a great intercessor. He's not a saint yet. He's on his way to sainthood. I believe he probably will be one day, but only God knows that. But I believe in calling upon these great servant of God's, the venerables, the blessed, for those miracles. In the case of St. Faustina, Maureen Deegan actually prayed before St. Faustina, who was a venerable at the time. She wasn't even blessed. Her miracle took place. Father Ron Pytel, they called upon Faustina to heal this Catholic priest who was born with a congenital heart problem, and he was not going to survive. Miraculously healed of that when she was a blessed. That led to the canonization. So I want to introduce you to somebody who I've felt a call to promote, a call to pray to, and who I believe is going to intercede. And maybe it's you. Maybe it's your situation that he'll come through for in a powerful way. I'm joined by a good friend of mine, Linda Shainman. She's been she's the one who introduced me. I prayed at the tomb of Father Mazzucchelli and held the very chain that he wore and did harsh penance with her. And I'm grateful for both her friendship and this introduction. And if you want to know how to spell his name, I know some people say, how do you spell his name? All right, good Italian name, right? That can be kind of hard. Mazzucchelli. I'll do it again, okay? Samuel, Mazzucchelli. So Mazzucchelli. I'll give it to you again later. But so that's how you spell the name. If you want to check it out, you can find him. You can actually probably, when COVID is over, pilgrimage to his site and spend some time there. But he was a man, if you're just joining me, who was a great pioneer, a great evangelist on the early frontier, a very profound Catholic priest that had incredible impact on the natives here and bringing Christ to them and the faith. And he even had this one encounter where he traveled for miles in order to see Joseph Smith, the founder of the Mormons. I mean, we'll tell you about that. That's a pretty cool story too, right? And built churches. He was a profound architect and a teacher and made his way throughout the upper Midwest. He designed and built at least 20 different churches, and he was known for his holiness. He had visions of the Mother of God and even St. Joseph. And his cause is, underway right now. And Linda, so much to talk about. I'd like to pick up on penance, because you take a look at Bernadette Subaru, you take a look at the Fatima Seers, you take a look at St. Faustina, you take a look at all the great saints, Padre Pio in particular, they all embraced suffering. They understood the value and the power of it. And even when they weren't personally suffering from any personal affliction, they did harsh penances. And Father Mazzucchelli, he understood this as well. Not only did he have devotion to the Mother of God under the title of Our Lady of Sorrows, but he wore something that people don't understand. St. Thomas More wore a hair shirt, which would irritate the body and scratch and irritate. The Fatima Seers tied ropes tightly around their waist and did penance. Father Mazzucchelli had what they called a penance chain. Would you explain what a penance chain is and ultimately what kind of penances he did?
Sure. So the penance chain that Father Mazzucchelli wore, which no one even knew he had until after he died and they were preparing the body for burial. So he did it as obviously a private devotion. And he must have been wearing it for a number of years, because as he grew and gained a little weight, it became embedded into his skin. So they said it was actually blood stained. Wow. So it's an iron chain that he had wrapped around his waist, and obviously he wore it, day and night. So even the Fatima Seers, the Blessed Mother, told them to take their ropes, their cords off at night, but he wore his day and night. So that penance chain is now on exhibit at Cincinnati. So people can go and venerate that, and there's been a number of healings associated with people using that relic and praying with it.
So expand on that. What kind of healings are you talking about?
Well, one healing in particular was Robert Uselman had lung cancer, and his family went there in 2001 to pray for his intercession to cure him of cancer. And while he was there with his family and the sisters, they used the Father Mazzucchelli's penance chain. Wow. And later on, Robert Uselman discovered that a cancerous tumor had disappeared from his lung.
Wow.
And they opened, Bishop Marlino was our bishop at the time, they opened a diocesan tribunal, and they concluded the investigations and sent the results to Rome. And they go through a very, very, very serious scrutiny to determine, because it has to be, miracles, according to the Catholic Church, have to be instantaneous, they have to be permanent, and they have to be no explainable medical cause. So it's very difficult to get a miracle certified. So we sent the results over. Unfortunately, there has been no definitive ruling on this this cure. The family obviously believes that they received a miraculous cure. Yeah. So one thing people can pray for is pray that this miracle would be accepted. And Father, if it is accepted, so Father right now, Father Mazzuchelli is venerable. So there's four steps to sainthood. Can I go through those?
No, please go right ahead. Then we'll take a couple calls. We only have a few minutes.
Okay.
Go right ahead.
First step is servant of God. And then next step is venerable, which is where Father Mazzuchelli is. And that's where you pray to God for Father Mazzuchelli's intercession for a miracle. And if that is approved, then he would be elevated to, he would be beatified and be called blessed. And then you go through the same process one more time, another miracle, and then he would be canonized and become a saint.
Wow, so beautiful. Let's do this. I want to take a couple phone calls for you. And again, we're talking about Father Samuel Mazzuchelli, and today God calls him home. How many years ago was it now that he died?
157 years ago in 1864.
Wow. This was an anointed place, wasn't it? I think about the United States in the late 1800s, 1859, the Mother of God appeared. I mean, there's so much that's unfolded. 1892, 33 years, the date of that apparition, Leo XIII gave the statue of St. Joseph, the National Shrine. It's now the National Shrine of St. Joseph to this country. You have Mazzuchelli at that time. A lot of these contemporaries crossed paths, I'm sure. Eileen's listening in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Eileen, thank you for calling in. Good afternoon.
Oh, thank you for the fascinating show. My mom had a temporary vocation with the Cincinnati Dominicans way back when they had the beautiful white habits. We have a picture of her like that. But God called her to be our mom. Anyway, so she witnessed, I think it was the Mother Superior. My sister knows this better. She witnessed a sister have an injury on her hand, and she had a relic of Father Mazzuchelli with her that she put on the hand and under her, the big cuffs that they wore, and it was cured. And she just, my mom witnessed that. I can't remember the details, but.
Wow, that's awesome.
But,
that's great.
I can see why my mom was always so endeared to him. So.
I love him. I don't know. I feel drawn to him. Hey, thank you, Eileen, for sharing that. What a beautiful story. So, you know, we have a couple minutes. Let me ask you about that. Are there more miracles being reported? I know we have this miraculous lung cancer, you know, healing, but are there others that are in queue right now? Are you aware of others? And what can people
Linda,
too? What can they do, those who are sick? Can you visit? Should we just pray? What would you suggest?
Okay. Well, there are a number of other reported miraculous cures. I'm not sure if I'm at liberty to share what are. But people are praying for his intercession. And, of course, the miracles ultimately come through God, as we know. And, but we're praying for intercession, and God gives us saints for imitation and intercession. And so you definitely can be praying to for the intercession of Vanessa Kelly for physical and also spiritual favors. And I just wanted to mention that, you know, a lot of times we think about physical healings, but, you know, one of the biggest hardships are parents and grandparents have right now is their children have left the faith. And so Father Mazzuchelli, what a great evangelizer. I would really encourage people to pray for his intercession, for his evangelization for the family to return to the faith.
That's such a great prayer. I remember praying with you. I held that chain probably for half an hour, that penance chain.
You did. I think you have the record for holding it longer than anybody else, Drew.
And then I held the box afterwards. It was it. We walked all over the place. I probably had that for a couple of hours.
You did.
I just felt, you know, I felt his presence, and I was praying for somebody in particular, and to your point of not physical healing, I was praying for somebody who was struggling emotionally when we were there. They've had anxiety and other issues, and I really think Father interceded. You know, to this very day, I pray to him for certain needs. I mean, there's certain saints I turn to for certain things, and of course, I think we're going to see him in much, you know, greater prominence in the days ahead, and I look forward to that beatification. Susan.
I do, too, Susan. Because it would take place in the Madison
Linda.
Diocese.
That would be great. Well, Linda, look, thank you for introducing me to this powerful intercessor. And I will remember you along with my personal intentions, okay? And you got to come into the studio and where we can pray together, and I'll come back down and we'll pray by the grave again and we'll connect. It'll be fun, okay?
I'm looking forward to that, Drew.
All right. God bless you, Linda. Have a great one, okay?
God bless you too, Drew.
All right. That's Linda Shaman, servant of God, Father Samuel Mazzucchelli, one of these great evangelists, early pioneers, holy priests, mystics, visionaries, and I think future saints. So I believe, as I said when I began this segment, in the communion of saints, and I believe they intercede for us. So let's pray. If you want to join me anytime here in studio, 888-914-9149. We receive hundreds of your phone calls every day, all thanks to the Catholic Order of Foresters studio line. Our sponsor offers flexible life insurance and annuities. Visit relevantradio.com/Forester today. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
Black History Month, you find?
Ridiculous.
Why?
You're going to relegate my history to a month?
Oh, come on.
What do you do with yours? Which month is White History Month? Come on, tell me.
I'm Jewish.
Okay, which month is Jewish History Month?
There isn't one.
Oh, why not? Yeah. You want one?
No.
I don't either. I don't want a Black History Month. Black history is American history.
How are we going to get rid of racism until...
Stop talking about it. I'm going to stop calling you a white man.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you to stop calling me a black man. I know you as Mike Wallace. You know me as Morgan Freeman. You're going to say, well, I know this white guy named Mike Wallace. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, I think that's profound. I really do. Great job, Maggie, on that audio. That, of course, is Morgan Freeman in a conversation with Mike Wallace. And I share the same passion. I want to be post-racial. I don't always agree with Morgan Freeman, but I'll tell you what, I do agree with him on this. Why do we have to identify one another by the color of our skin, by our pigmentation, or by even our sexuality? I mean, it's ridiculous. Why can't we look at each other as brothers, sisters, fellow human beings, fellow citizens of this great country? And I love what he had to say. You're Jewish? Do you want a Jewish month? No. And Morgan Freeman says, I don't want a Black History Month. February is marked here in the U.S. as Black History Month. And I know some people probably disagree with the conversation that we're having. It has its history going all the way back to 1915 when the country had a three-week celebration marking the 50th anniversary of course, Lincoln's very famous Emancipation Proclamation, and there was a historian by the name of Carter Woodson who was inspired by that to start an association. It was a scholarly association for Black Studies, and he eventually launched a Black History Week. Believe it or not, you would think this is a new incarnation, but it goes all the way back to 1926, and he chose this month. He chose February because we just celebrated Abraham Lincoln's birthday, right? Lincoln was born on the 12th of the month, and Frederick Douglass was born on the 14th of the month, two great figures in that chapter written in our nation's history regarding slavery. It became more popular in the 60s, eventually became Black History Month under Gerald Ford. But in our current culture, the figures who are celebrated during the month, with the exceptions of people like Martin Luther King Jr., are Rosa Parks and Jackie Robinson. You take those three paragons out, and you've got others with some dubious connections, right? Joining me today is Dr. Paul Kangor, a regular contributor here. He wrote a great piece. You can check it out. It's called My Top 10 Black Conservatives, and some of these will surprise you. I've invited him to stop by today to give us a look not only at this month, but go through some of his picks. And you're more than welcome to join us, too. Feel free to dial in at 888-914-9149. Hey, Doctor, welcome back. It's always good to talk with you.
Yeah, hey, thanks, Drew. Good to be on, and this is a fun topic, and I appreciate that history you just gave of Black history. I actually did not know that it went back that far, and in fact, that makes me think that, first of all, let me say, I'm not against it. I'm not against having this month. I do think it was more needed back then than it is today. I mean, I think maybe you and I have talked about this before, how you watch NFL games and, you know, they have racism across the end zone. And you think to yourself, you know, this is really the last audience that you need to be telling that to. I'm sitting there watching the game with all my kids, and they all have jerseys of black athletes, right? Pittsburgh Steelers, Franco Harris, Najee Harris, Chase Claypool. You got 100,000 people in a stadium cheering for black guys and white guys alike. I was watching my Pitt Panthers play a few nights ago, and they played Georgia Tech, and we were jumping up and down, rooting for them. They had Black History Month T-shirts on, and all five of the Panthers the Pitt Panther guys were black, and so were the Georgia Tech guys. And my youngest son is adopted. He's black. And none of us are sitting around thinking about blackness. Yep. Right. So it's kind of a weird thing. I'll throw one more in there. I don't know if you saw this in the last 24 hours, but a symbol of black radicalism still living in America, Angela Davis, who is a notorious American communist, probably the most notorious living female communist in America, was absolutely blown away, shocked, stunned when she found out, what's the guy's show? I think it's Gates. He does the Ancestry show. Mm-hmm. That she had an ancestor aboard the Mayflower, Drew.
Wow.
Angela Davis.
Wow.
And she looked like she was ready to fall off of her chair.
Wow.
Awesome. But it really makes the point that history is literally not black and white. And this kind of forcing people into these binary categories is just ridiculous. I mean, we really are. My kids right now are doing their Ancestry.com things. And, you know, they are absolute mutts, mongrels of everything, you know, all over the place.
That's so true.
So it really would be good to get beyond this. And a lot of the people that I think that are feeding it and fomenting it are people who I think want to divide us by race. But that said, like I said, I'm not against Black History Month, and it's a good time to honor people like, you know, Jackie Robinson, Rosa Parks, and others, and even the people that I wrote about on the list.
I hope we can get to the point where we're post-racial. I say to my wife all the time as I watch the news, and there's always these firsts. The first are based on somebody's skin color or sexual orientation or whatever it might be. It's like, I can't wait till we're done this, and we don't define people by the pigment of their skins or by their sexual orientation, but rather by the content of their character, by their intelligence, by what they can do. And one day we'll get that, I hope.
Yeah, that's what the Reverend King said, right? To judge by the content of my character, not the color of my skin. I'm going to make this political.
Yeah.
But with the partisan ideology and, you know, the politicizing with the liberal left, the progressive left, it's all about putting people into groups. And you mentioned sexuality. I mean, look at the month of June. It's become Gay Pride Month.
Yeah.
I have a former student who's a student assistant, and he's gay and he's married another man, and, you know, he knows that I'm against all that stuff. I don't consider it marriage and everything.
Right, right.
But he said, I do not want to be known as a gay man. So I do not want to be known that way. And others are trying to tell him, oh, you will be known that way, and that's how we're gonna make you known that way. And we want you out there in June, you know, carrying a flag and everything else. So it's a really sad thing, and I think partisan politics and ideology is driving a lot of it.
Yeah, no kidding. And Doctor, I'm going to take a break, and I want to talk to you on the other side. Before I go, I want you to know we prayed for you, your family, and in particular for your father. And
if those
who are not listening, Dr. Kengor's father had a pretty serious operation, and he just returned from the hospital. So if you could keep him in your prayers. How's your dad doing?
He's doing great. I just saw him 5 or 10 minutes ago, and he says hello to everybody. And yeah, so he had triple bypass surgery, and it was very unexpected. But he didn't have a heart attack before that, and he flew through the surgery, and no damage to the heart, no complications. So he looks great.
That's great.
So yeah, praise be to God. It's gone very well.
Well, I love it. Well, so stay with me. Let's take an early break, Doc. When we come back, we'll take a few calls. If you want to join us, the number's 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149, getting you connected to conversation, really an article that was written by Dr. Paul Kengor as well, his top 10 black conservatives. Some of those will surprise you. We'll go through that list and take your calls. Stay with us.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Today's programming is brought to you by St. Gregory Recovery Center in Iowa. More information about their faith-centered addiction treatment is available at relevantradio.com/stgregory.
Turn it up. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
You don't even know. I can make your hands clap.
Yeah, so good to be back here with you today. Thanks for joining me. I'm Drew Mariani, along with a very gifted author, Dr. Paul Kengor. He's a professor, a contributor at The Spectator, and we'll get you plugged into all of his connections. He just wrote an article that I saw, and I said, hey, we got to get him on to talk about this, and we'll link over to it for you as well. And he took a look at the top 10 black conservatives. And his list is an interesting one. And, Doctor, let's kick it off there before we take a few calls. If you're on hold, I will get you on the air. I see you there. We'll grab your calls before we run out of time here. But what inspired you to write, first of all, about the top 10 black conservatives? And how did you select, these particular individuals?
Well, I'll tell you what, Drew. I was really frustrated by these lists of prominent black Americans during Black History Month. And they always included people like Paul Robeson and Langston Hughes. And Paul Robeson was a Stalinist. He was a literal Stalinist. Langston Hughes, who's now required reading in our public schools, who is a poet, they don't have students read his poem, Goodbye Christ, Lord Jehovah, where he praises Marx and Lenin and Stalin. They don't quote him saying, put one more S in the USA, it will be the USSA when we take it over. Or W.E.B. Du Bois, who was one of the worst communists in these clubs, Communist Party USA did all over the country. So I said, enough of this. here's my list of people that I think ought to be honored. And I put on it people like Thomas Sowell, the late Walter Williams, Clarence Thomas, who's also a very devout Catholic. I put Candace Owens on that list. A couple names that I put on there that I think will really surprise people, and I did it partly out of fun, but I meant it too. Yeah. I put on the list Malcolm X, and a lot of people don't realize Malcolm X. It might be hard to call him a conservative. Although, by the way, he endorsed Barry Goldwater for president in 1964, but he did not like liberals. He did not like LBJ, and he was all about blacks seeking self-sufficiency, independence, lifting themselves up by their own bootstraps, believed that the welfare state was very demeaning to black Americans. And also on that list, another name, a radical name from the 60s, Eldridge Cleaver of the Black Panther Party. People do not know, Drew, by the 1980s, he did a total 180 and became this conservative Republican Reagan supporter who ran for Congress against the radical left-wing Black Democratic Congressman Ron Dellums from Berkeley. So Eldridge Cleaver ended up being a conservative after all of that. Star Parker, I have on the list. She's actually Catholic. Candace Owens, who I believe Candace Owens' husband is Catholic, I think. And I lead the list with George Schuyler, who at one time was called the most influential Negro columnist in America, wrote for the Pittsburgh Courier, which was probably the most influential black newspaper in the country for a long time. He wrote for it for over 40 years. And in fact, his daughter, Philippa, had this extraordinary conversion story, which actually brought Schuyler to the Christian faith as well. Schuyler had been an atheist before that. So those are some of the names that I have on my list, and maybe people could call in with some of their own candidates, nominations for the list.
I would love it. We'll grab a few phone calls. If you want to join us, the number is 888-914-9149. Deacon Martin is listening in Gary, Indiana. Doctor, he's got a comment or a question for you. Hi, Gary. Hi, Deacon.
Hello. It's not more of a comment than a question. I've been working on a project called Voices of Our People, Past and Present, documents 2,000 years of people from the African diaspora to the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. But also, when you get to slavery, people always want to talk about like the Middle Passage, and that's like 10% of slavery. Slavery's been existing for like 4,000 years. And what I research, I mean, and it affects Irish people. It's, you know, Prague was once a center for making eunuchs and part of the Muslim slave trade. So it's this dynamic that we have. I mean, in all these stories that I'm pulling together about people, you know, we have popes out of Africa. We have doctors of the church from Africa. But these things aren't talked about readily in the mainstream. And the things that I've found are not hard to find. I mean, I'm not doing anything extraordinary to find this stuff. And, Drew, as soon as I get my website up in the next week or so, I'm going to send you a link to it so you can actually take a look at all the work that's there. And, I mean, it's really a phenomenal thing.
Well, we can certainly talk about some of the greats, Deacon, like, you know, Augustus Tolton, Paquita. Right. There's a lot of greats.
Pierre Cousant. Yeah, that's right.
Augustus Tolton's named after St. Augustine, who was black. His mother, Monica. Yeah. I mean, that goes back into antiquity. So, I've really took a really deep dive in the different various parts of it. You look at the Healy family, you know, their contributions to America. It's just phenomenal. But then when you look at there's a dark side too. Also, I mean, like the American bishops would not accept African Americans into seminaries until 1967.
Hmm. I don't know that. I don't know that history. That
point. I love this phone call. I have a manuscript that I've done on the church and slavery through, which is going to be published through Emmaus Road Publishing, and that should be out the next year. And all of the names that he's mentioned, I have in the book, and I have chapters on Pierre Toussaint, Augustus Tolton, Paquita, there's a very narrow, myopic view of slavery in America, where, you know, we just think of black slavery, and obviously it's because of the American experience with it. But I mean, slavery goes back thousands and thousands. I mean, read your Bible.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, and you know, you and I are both Italian. We have Italian ancestry. My mom's 100%. My people in Italy, if it hadn't been for the Knights of Malta and the Battle of Lepanto, and all those things that happened there 500 years ago, my family from Sicily to Calabria would have been slaves. I might be Muslim today.
Yeah, so true.
People all over the world have been subject to slavery. And by the way, it still goes on today in places like Sudan. With black Muslim slave traders.
Yeah. Hey,
it's still a problem.
Deacon, be sure and send us that article, okay? Or your link to your website. I'd love to check it out. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Appreciate it. Good talking with you. God bless you.
Yeah. God bless.
Time's always the enemy. We'll move along. We'll get a few more calls in here. Elizabeth is in Buda, Texas. Elizabeth, hi. You're on the air with Dr. Kengor.
Hi. I was driving, but I was listening, but I thought I heard the author or someone say that it's not that black history is not really needed today as it was in the past, and something about, you know, the signs at the NFL games that say in racism, and maybe I misinterpreted that. I thought you were saying that it's not as bad as it is today or as it was in the past. And I just wanted to make a comment.
Yeah, go ahead. I would say it was more needed in the past, but it's I support it today. I'm glad. I think.
Get that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I just want to make a comment. Really, it is alive and well, and most recently in the last couple of weeks with my niece and her friends who attend Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas, have received hate messages on their dorm doors, and as well as the boys have had a noose hung over their door.
Oh my gosh, it's horrible.
And it has not been brought out to the light, and I want to bring it out to the light that it's still going on, and it breaks my heart. It really does.
Well, we're sorry to hear what you're going through, Elizabeth.
Yeah, we should pray for her family, and it's disgusting. It's awful. It's just when you think that most of that is behind us, and I'd like to say I think most of it is, but it still exists.
Yeah, no,
it
does.
It still exists.
Yeah, in fact,
imagine that happening to your kids. Yeah, imagine being a mom or dad. And like I said, you know, my youngest son is black, and you know, he hasn't had anything happen to him like that yet, but my wife and I are just bracing for the day that it does.
Yeah, it's so tragic. I was watching the news this morning, Doctor, and to Elizabeth's point, it does go on. There was some group out of, I think, Iowa or Idaho or somewhere, you know, that are making some racist group. And I'm thinking, how can these people even exist? I mean, how do you come up with that ideology or that rationale? What is it that drives that type of hatred? I just don't get it. I mean, it's so tragic. But to Elizabeth's point, and to your point, too, I think it's a little bit of both. I think things are evolving and changing, but there are still segments of the population, still hearts that are still, you know, unfortunately besieged by that darkness. Elizabeth.
I mean, there's no question that it's better. You could look at data, for example, on interracial dating, or interracial marriage. Mm-hmm. And I saw somebody did a thing on this on television. If you look at the polling over time on what Americans think about interracial marriage, it's gone from something that was supported by like 5% of the population to where they don't even ask the question anymore.
Wow.
Everybody supports it now. I mean, there might be only like 5% who are against it, or adoption or interracial children. So, I mean, that kind of thing, it's just so obvious that it's way better, but it's not gone. Yeah. There's no question about that.
Before I jump to Todd in Lexington, Kentucky, he's got another person for your list. I'm just curious, as you put your list together, and as what we're seeing in politics and the culture at large, how do you personally, Doctor, respond to criticism? There are some who argue that conservatism is inherently racist and that black conservatives are selling out. Candace Owen also gets accused of that by their own community. How do you address that?
Well, it's complete nonsense. And I mean, the whole conservative message, it actually has nothing to do with race whatsoever. It's about, you know, the idea that that there are certain timeless moral absolutes and truths that govern human conduct and that define who we are across generations and centuries and millennia of people. And so that has nothing to do with race.
Right.
There's nothing to do with race whatsoever.
Amen.
So, in fact, the more and more that things play out in Western society and America and the de-Christianization of the country, it's the progressive left that's becoming very, very, very secular. And black Americans have always been probably the most religious demographic in the country.
Yeah,
and so, you know, they've always been religiously and culturally, and in many ways, even socially conservative, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
But that's just politics and nonsense.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We are up against the clock. Todd, my apologies, in Lexington, Kentucky. He's got a name for you, Doctor. How about Dr. Alan Keyes, right? Black conservative, former presidential candidate.
Alan Keyes is on my list.
He's on your list there, too?
He's on my list.
There you go, Todd. We'll post the list.
And he's Catholic.
For you as well. Yeah, great list. Right. We should go through it in greater detail again in the not-too-distant future. Doctor, thanks for being here.
All right, thanks.
Appreciate your time. Top of the hour, Cale Clark is coming up straight ahead. God bless.